You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge-podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modge-podge.
Yeah, there's a modge-podge. Whole modge-podge of rumors.
This is a transfer modge-podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Welcome to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XM FC Channel 85. Conference championship time. Once again, we're ready for the second legs. Here, of course, I am David Goss, joined by Ben Baer, Matt Doyle, out in San Francisco. We had our guest appearances, our loan signings of Kurt Larson and Sam Stachkol for the last show, and now we bring back our starter and Ben Baer.
Clearly that didn't work out. I mean,
because you're back.
Yeah, I'm back. I mean, their loans expired.
It was emergency.
They didn't impress, and they're not back for next year.
We had someone who tweeted at us, and they said that Kurt Larson had a very romantic voice. And that they
was
were
it
fan.
Simon? Did Simon tweet that? Because Simon loves Kurt Larson.
How many fake social media accounts do you think Simon Borg controls?
At least 30.
Yeah, right?
I see his tweet deck, and it's amazing.
Of MLS Digital.
Simon Borg just out there liking tweets about rival editors just whenever he wants to, just in case. Well, we're back with a bang, guys, and it feels good to be back. Toronto FC hosting Columbus Crew Wednesday, November 29th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on FS1, TSN 1, 4, and 5, and TVA Sports. We've got, of course, a Western Conference Championship to preview, and then MLS rosters. Teams are starting to announce who they will be bringing back for next year and who will be free agents, who will be available, who won't be under contract, and who will be going bye-bye as well. We've got coaching news out in San Jose, as well as potentially out in Colorado that we're going to talk about, and then a lot of people complaining on the email and on Twitter about basically everything we talk about and everything we do, which I'm looking forward to getting into in the mailbag. And let's start out with this TFC Columbus matchup, 0-0 coming into the second leg. Arthur, the only yellow card suspension after picking one up in the first leg. Of course, Sebastian Giovinco and Josie Altidore returning for the second one. Doyle, let's start with Columbus. What's the number one reason this Crew SC side can get through?
Just because Toronto FC haven't been sharp. They look beatable in a way that they didn't throughout most of the year. I think the last really good game I saw them play was sometime in like mid-August or mid-October, rather, maybe even before that, which is it's kind of a backhanded compliment to Columbus, but like Columbus haven't exactly been sharp the last 2 games out either, you know. So Toronto FC for the longest time looked like a juggernaut, and right now they don't. So I think if you want to make an argument for Crew SC, that's the one.
Aren't you going a little far back there? I mean, their game September 30th against the Red Bulls, they were class in that game.
Toronto. Yeah, no,
I think it was 4-2.
Yeah,
I mean, they looked incredible in that game.
Didn't I?
You said it was mid-August.
Well, all right, I misspoke. The last time they looked good was before the awful international date in early October.
Well, they went on the road and got a draw at Atlanta on decision day. That was a pretty big game in front of a pretty big crowd. But there's definitely no arguing that TFC hasn't hit full gear here in the playoffs. Victor Vasquez, a lot was put on his shoulders, Doyle, going into the last game with no Giovinco, no Josie. How different is playoff soccer in this league than the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, you could run around out there with an axe handle and not get called for a foul for the most part. Like it's
unless you play for Houston,
right? Though I thought that was really, was it Sabiga who was reffing? He did a great job in that game, or was it Sabiga who did?
Yeah, I think it was Penso.
Yeah, and both guys did. I thought for the most part, really good jobs. it is more physical. I think it tends to be less sort of expressive attacking play and just more compact. Managers get a little bit more clever in terms of what we saw it from Greg Vanney. I mean, this team had not played a 4-1-4-1 pretty much all season, and then they come out with that last time out. We saw it from Jesse Marsh in the previous round, going with a diamond 4-4-2 with Tyler Adams as a playmaker slash destroyer. Like, you see more clever stuff in the playoffs, and teams sort of trying to exploit their opposition's weakness rather than necessarily playing to their own strengths. It's you win in different ways at this time of the year. And maybe that's one of the things that makes Toronto a little bit more vulnerable, because their strength is in their depth, and the depth test comes during the regular season. During the postseason, it's about how physical you can be, and then, like, how high is your ceiling? And the great LA Galaxy teams were always able to, like, just sort of hang in there physically and then, you know, crank the attack up and hit, you know, reach their ceiling when they needed to. I mean, that game against RSL in 2014, when they just went out there and just killed them 5-0, like stuff like that. And I don't know. I mean, Toronto FC had it last year. They just haven't showed it this year, since, as Ben mentioned so astutely, that that win over the Red Bulls at the end of September.
And you talk about depth, though. If they win this series, it'll be for that reason, because they will have played 50% of it without Giovinco and Josie, and no other team in the league. You think there's any other team in the league that could go?
No, I mean, yeah, I don't really understand that point. We just saw how much their depth was such a huge plus for them. I mean, it was mitigating circumstances. How often do you see a guy get a red card for a tunnel incident, and then two straight, and then yellow cards in back-to-back games to have another player suspended? But that, I mean, the depth proved it's where. I mean, Tosin Ricketts didn't really do a lot, but just the way that they were able to fill in and still get that 0-0 draw on the first leg is huge. And I don't know how many other teams, if you take away Sasha Kljestan and BWP from the Red Bulls, do they get a similar result? Or if you look at, you know, Columbus, Higuain, and Kamara, or any of these other teams, take away the two top players, could they have gotten that result? I don't think so, and that's why the depth was key in the playoffs over.
So they lost their two best forwards, and you're praising them for pitching a shutout. Okay, Ben, that's good stuff. Let's get Gasman. Let's get Kurt and Sam back for the next show. All right.
Ben, you got to come in firing. I was in favor of
you. I just came in firing.
Dora's the one who cut you last week, by the way. I was going to have you on the show anyway, but Doyle has been working back channels with the manager myself and been talking.
You're the manager or the TD?
I'm both. I'm Chris Leach for the last 4 months, but not for the next 4 months.
Got it.
When you look at TFC, it's got to be a 3-5-2 again, right? Giovinco, Josie come back in. Nothing really crazy that Greg Vanney has to do now.
I think so. I mean, it would be weird for them to go through this, to make it into MLS Cup by going away from what has served them so well for the last year plus. But maybe they feel like it's been scouted so much that they're better served by rearranging the pieces. I would go with the 3-5-2 and say, all right, we're just gonna go out there with the best that we absolutely have, and what we know works. But I mean, we've seen some guys throw some stuff at the wall this playoff run, and Greg Vanney included.
For Columbus, Ben, they get the 0-0. You'd like to score at home, as Daryl said, against a team that's missing two star players, didn't really have an attack going themselves. You don't. You go on the road. You score a goal, you put yourself in a good place. You can score, tie, and go through. You have a chance here on the road in a place where not a lot of people get results. How does the crew go about this? Because it's Greg Berhalter. I mean,
Berhalter has shown throughout this entire playoffs and throughout the, you know, past couple of months that he's able to adapt and change his style a little bit. I expect, you know, I think we're still going to see the 4-2-3-1. There was talk of, you know, maybe seeing the 3 at the back, 5 at the back in the first leg. We didn't see it in that game. I think maybe because, I mean, it seems like they expected Toronto to keep their formation, which they didn't. So it seems like he'd still keep the 4-2-3-1. But we saw against Atlanta, they're a little bit, I mean, they're a different team. Atlanta presses really high. Toronto is more selective pressing. But they're able to play well on the road and create chances. I mean, they should have scored two or three goals in that game. And, you know, as Joel said, yeah, they're not unstoppable right now. They're not playing at their top level. Can they get to their A-plus game on Wednesday night? I think they can. Just because they haven't in the past 2 months doesn't mean that they can't on Wednesday night. But there's a good possibility that they're not there. They're playing at their maybe B level. and Columbus can beat them at the B level.
Pedro Santos had one or two moments where he got some open space and made some things happen. Justin Miram, a really quiet game in that first leg. How does Greg Berhalter, Doyle, get these two going?
They gotta pull Michael Bradley out of that hole in front of the defense, and that's when teams have had success against Toronto FC this year. It's because they've been able to sort of bait Bradley to come upfield and leave the center backs exposed, leave the back line exposed. And Bradley was, I mean, I thought his passing was a little bit off, but overall he was super disciplined and did a good job of protecting that back line in the first leg. And again, that might just be something. It was weird. You don't, if you're planning for TFC, if you're game planning for them, you don't plan to play against a back four. So maybe that just threw Columbus off just enough. But either way, whether it's a 4-1-4-1 again, or maybe a diamond that I know they've toyed with at times, or the 3-5-2, you got to move Bradley out of that zone. You got to punish Toronto when he leaves space exposed there, and that means guys like Pedro Santos and Justin Miram cutting inside and then sort of being decisive with the final ball, rather than I thought they were off a little bit in that first leg.
When you look at this lineup for Columbus, with Arthur suspended, you expect Mohamed Abu to come into that central midfield role. Raitala got the start at left back. I don't know that we'll see him again.
Why not?
You think he gets the start again? He did not look.
He didn't look. Yeah, he didn't look great.
He looked like he'd been sitting on the bench for a while.
But I think the reasoning for starting Raitala is, he has that left foot on the left side. They've been playing Hector Jimenez there, and he's obviously right footed. And I think they felt maybe they can get in, they can get some more crosses in with the three man back line, get in behind Steven Betashore or Nicholas Hess or whoever was supposed to be there, and get crosses in. And obviously with the 4-1-4-1, they weren't able to do that, and that's why I think maybe he was ineffective. But with Toronto probably shifting back to that 3-5-2, that opportunity may open up again, and that's not something I really see Hector Jimenez being able to, take advantage of. And why
Biz,
Rod Teller can.
Do you go with Hostler or Betashore if you're Toronto?
I think he's going to go with Hostler. I think Hostler is more offensive. I think Vanny probably thinks that he needs to get two goals in this game, right?
Because
if you give up a goal,
if you don't shut them out,
you need to score two. So he needs to go. He needs to try and get as many goals as possible. Hostler has shown better to me in attack this season. Betashore's, he's been coming back from injury. He's been in and out of the lineup. I think he's a better defender. I think you go try and go out, get the two goals with Hostler on the field, and then bring on Betashore for the last 30 minutes, which is what we've seen in the past couple of months.
Is there any other lineup question marks for either of these sides that either of you are looking at?
Not really. I think Betashore versus Hostler is the big one. I think for Toronto FC, I mean, you could make an argument that Nick Haglund maybe deserves to be in there, but I think he'll sit for Zavaleta. On Columbus, it's Raitala versus Jimenez. Otherwise, it all sort of picks itself, including, as you said, Abu for Artur. And if you're looking for one particular spot on the field that I think Toronto FC can exploit, that's the one. Mohamed Abu does some nice stuff in terms of passing the ball, but his defensive reactions are really, really slow. And he doesn't have great athleticism either. So when you pair him with Will Trapp in that sense, you get some gaps that people can just murder. And we saw it a bunch of times this year. And if you're studying film, you're Toronto FC, you look at that and you say, okay, we're going to move Victor Vasquez around a little bit, try to get him the ball in some fun spots and, maybe be able to send runners through the lines. And that brings us back to Hostler. I like Hostler more than Betashore in this game because Hostler actually provides some penetration. Betashore is a right wing back, just supports play. He doesn't sort of go into the final third and initiate it. Hostler can actually get through the lines and give Vasquez another target to pick out.
Let's talk about predictions with these two. Not just score, but who changes this game for either team? Ben, who do you see getting through this one, and who do you see making it happen?
I hate these questions.
I know. So then pick an X factor. Who's your X factor?
What's an X factor? Define an X factor.
I would say either man of the match, or you walk away and you say something.
I mean, the man, the, like,
or you walk
these
away.
Questions are always like, It's Javinko. Javinko, I think if Javinko plays well, they're going to win no matter what. If he doesn't, then I think it's up in the air. I mean, the best player on the field does well, they're going to win.
That's Ben's breakdown.
I mean, I just hate that kind of question. I just don't like that kind of question.
What question would you like to be asked? Now he doesn't have an answer.
Yeah, well, I'm not the host. The host comes up with the questions.
Doyle, do you have an answer to said question? So Ben over here is picking Javinko over Columbus Crew SC. He's leaving Toronto FC out. It's just Javinko versus 11 other guys.
Yeah, obviously Javinko can go out there and win a game all by himself, but you don't want to count on that if you're Toronto FC. And what's been missing the past few weeks is they've been kind of hesitant to push numbers up the field and exert concerted pressure. And they're not known as like the highest, hardest pressuring team in the league. But if you watch their games this year, most of their best stuff comes from when they sort of just envelop you with that 3-5-2, and they can create pressure points where I think other teams don't. And they got to get back to that. Because I think if they do get back to that against this Columbus Central defense, there will be mistakes made. And if you're making mistakes against Jose Altidore and Sebastian Javinko in the playoffs, your ticket's going to get punched pretty quick. So I think the X factor is going to be how high and how hard does Toronto FC press. If they do it right, I think that they can maybe end this one pretty quick.
One last thing that we talked about off air last show, but didn't talk about on air, and Sam Sajko wrote something about it, was the two young goalkeepers, Zach Steffen, Alex Bono, both young American keepers, both playing the bulk of the minutes for their team this year. When you look at those two guys, one of them's going to an MLS Cup at this young an age as a starting goalkeeper. Is either of them ready to take over the reins for the U.S. anytime soon?
It's not a question we have to answer anytime soon. You know, we've still got, 18 months at least until the next meaningful games for the U.S. I think both will be in the mix, as will Jesse Gonzalez. I still think that Bill Hamid is the most talented keeper in the pool. And hopefully he kind of answers that question. Brad Guzan still absolutely has a place in the pool as well. So there's choices to make. But none of them are particularly pressing. And if both guys keep on their current trajectory, we'll see enough of them in red, white, and blue. Maybe not as long-term number one, but certainly in friendlies and maybe off your gold cups.
Well, they will face off Wednesday, November 29th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports 1, TSN 1, 4, and 5, and TVA Sports, that one going in, of course, at 0-0 at a sold-out BMO Field. Now let's look to the West. Seattle, a huge first-leg victory, 2-0. Over Houston. They host Thursday night, November 30th at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, TSN 1, and TVA Sports. A ton of suspension for Houston. The two big ones, Albert Elise, and then, of course, Jahlil Anibaba picking up that red card. And then Roman Torres on the other side will be suspended. Ozzie Alonso was out injured, as was Stefan Fry in the first leg. And we'll see how if they're able to come back for this second leg. There have been two teams that have come back from 2-0 first leg deficits to win in the second leg. It hasn't happened since 2004 when KC came back over San Jose. Doyle, give me a blueprint. How does Houston get back?
I don't think they do. There is no conceivable blueprint.
That wasn't the question. You guys got to answer. No, I'm just kidding.
honestly, I don't know how they get back into this one. I guess you can maybe suggest that they go right at that central defense, because no Roman Torres means the Sounders are a different team, but this is not looking good for the Dynamo.
Do you think you see Tony Alfaro in there, or Gustav Svensson dropped in?
I don't think they trust Alfaro. They've given him some chances, and he's had some nice games, but he's had some clunkers too. And in general, Schmetzer has tended to go with Gustav Svensson in that spot. Now, it does make Seattle nominally weaker in central midfield, because it means you have to drop Nico Lodero back into a number 8 and Roldan back into a number 6, where he's not really that good.
Or start Jordy Delam.
What's that?
Or start Jordy Dilem like they did in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. True. There is that option as well. And Dilem was pretty decent there, though you lose a lot of your ability to move the ball. Of course, you don't really need to move the ball a ton in this one because you're just protecting. You're sitting on a 2-0 lead. And so they kind of have to come to you. I don't see a way back for Houston. I just don't. There's no way they go out and get a 3-1 or better in this.
You look at this Houston team. They have no Elise, so you assume Kubo and Minota start. Potentially Kyoto as well. Is there anyone that can drive this attack?
I mean, all those players you mentioned can drive the attack. I mean, it's possible. Have we seen them drive the attack recently?
Not since.
I mean, they scored three. No, they've actually, when you look at their results over the past like month and two, they have scored three goals. They have scored two goals. They have been able to score, which is kind of shocking considering like when you look at Kubo's recent form, Elise in Kyoto, because a lot of that was through your guy Chente. So
Legend.
They can. I'm with Doyle. I don't really see them being able to score probably at least three or four goals in Seattle, even without Roman Torres on the field.
For Seattle, if Brian Schmetzer goes to back-to-back MLS Cups, not even taking that result, and he gets a win in his first year, I mean, it's only 2 years as coach, but you start to put yourself in a stratosphere where you're, you know, going to be a club legend, of course. But you're also arguably one of the most successful MLS coaches of all time in just a year and a half.
If you get two MLS Cups in 2 years, how many coaches have two MLS Cups? There's, what, three or four guys that maybe have that? So, yeah, he's already there, and he's only been a coach for a year and a half.
We have an email, Doyle, from someone talking about Schmetzer and saying that he feels like when he watches this team play, Schmetzer always goes out to win. He always goes for blood. He always pushes his team a little bit farther. He thought that, an example, Lamar Nagel coming on late in that game at Houston rather than maybe going a little bit more defensive was an example of that. What has Schmetzer brought to this franchise, to this specific squad that's allowed them to be so successful?
I think it's the opposite. I don't see him as a guy who pushes his team out, you know, sort of hell bent for leather every time. I mean, think about the first 145 minutes of the series with Vancouver. You know, think about the long. I mean, there were prolonged stretches during the season, during which Seattle couldn't score, and he was just kind of sort of like even keeled. What Schmetzer's greatest attribute as a coach, from, you know, outside looking in, and from what I've heard from people involved with the team, is that he's just kind of a steady Eddie kind of guy. You know, he's not a tactical genius and he doesn't pretend to be. The players all like him a lot, and they certainly respect him enough. And he has a bunch of veterans who he trusts to do their jobs. And he puts them in position to do those jobs. And that's what you've gotten. And teams like that tend to, you know, they tend to be super pragmatic, which his team is, and they don't tend to mess around too much with getting cute with different formations and other tactical things, and that's been very much his approach. And they tend to be very defensive. And if you look at it, Seattle, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, they've yet to give up a goal in these playoffs, and they didn't give up a lot in last year's playoffs either. They also finished the regular season with two straight shutouts, and you know, they are posting zeros, and that is a testament to Schmetzer's ability to understand the personnel he has and put them in a position to do what they do best.
When you look at this Houston roster, no Anibaba, so they're going to have to make some changes along the back, and we mentioned Noah Lease. Who do you think slides into this starting lineup? How do you think Cabrera puts this one together, Ben?
I'm kind of interested to see how he puts it together. He knows he needs to come out and score. So putting what you know, nominally what you would think he would do was put Machado right back and Senderos and Leonardo at center backs. But do you really want to do that? Because Machado's not going to be able to push forward that much. You have Beasley on the other side who, you know, he gets forward but not as much as you would hope in a game where you need 2 to 3, 4 goals. Maybe he switches it all up, you know, maybe plays it back three with Machado, Leonardo, and Senderos and just pushes everyone else forward. Maybe he doesn't play a true right back. Maybe Kyoto's playing right wing back or something like that. that's what I would want to see if I was a Houston fan, because, I mean, who cares if you lose, if you give up another couple of goals and you lose 4 or 5 nothing, the whole point of this game is you need to create chances somehow. Get guys in the box, create chances. So that's what I would hope to see. What I think he's going to do is just put Machado there in the first option, but I want to see maybe a little more experimental, even though Houston has not played that formation all season.
Would you care if you were Wilmer Cabrera? Would you care if your young team in this one sort of got played off the field? Would you be like, oh man, that was a mistake to put them in a position. We were trying to win 4-1, but we ended up losing 4-1.
I don't think so. I mean, they've been saying the past couple weeks that this is all kind of gravy at this point anyways. So what's the difference? I don't think it's going to hurt their confidence. They know they're in a tough spot. They know what they're dealing with. They know they had a tough first leg, and that's really where they kind of lost the series potentially. And, you know, going out there and trying to score goals, I don't think is really going to hurt their confidence. They know the spot they're in. I mean, I don't think that's going to hurt their confidence.
It's a tough choice because there's the chance that you go out and let's say you grind it out for a 1-0 victory on the road because Seattle's not really going to go for it. You take it as a moral victory, right, and you sell your team like you were only one goal short.
Is that a moral victory, though?
But you can sell to a young team. We were only one goal short. We're coming together. We made a mistake in the first leg and got a red card, but we should have done better. But at the same time, why not go out and try and win? So I agree with Ben in that. Just go for it and let it rip and see what happens. Play Andrew Wenger at target right back and
let the
whole thing go and just change the world. On the other side, Joel, we talked a little bit about the back line. Victor Rodriguez has been getting healthy as well. Do you think Jovan Jones starts in midfield? Will Bruin gets the start? What do you expect to see?
I'm not sure. I mean, the Jordy Delem thing at defensive midfield, if Ozzie can't go, and I believe that he won't be able to, it makes a lot of sense to put him there and leave Roldan as the eight and go with what they went with last time out. It means you have a little less punch and attack, but you don't need attack. You just need to be completely solid defensively. And having Delem there and a defensive midfield and Jones at left midfield means that Dempsey and Ladero can freelance a little bit more. And when those guys can freelance, that's when Seattle's at their best. I think they could actually be a little more creative when they have one fewer creative player on the field, if that makes sense. That's what I would look for if I was Brian Schmetzer. No need to risk opening this game up and turning it into a track meet, because that's just about the only way I could see them losing.
I feel like Dempsey's just enjoying this whole week, thinking about the fact that he's going to get some open looks and some opportunities to take some guys one-on-one. Free will, no fear in that second leg. Seattle hosting Thursday night, November 30th, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, TSN1, and TVA Sports up 2-0. Why? Because everyone's trying to get to MLS Cup. That one's going to happen December 9th, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Guys, I'm on the MLS schedule page, and the next thing is MLS Cup. That's exciting. Of course, it's 4 p.m. Eastern time, MLS Cup on ESPN, Unimas, and TSN, and you're going to have MLS Cup Central all week here from this studio, because, yes, we're actually sitting behind the studio right now recording this one. Ike Opara, Dax McCarty, Gresselmania, Tim Melia, and other fantastic guests to come in and help host that one. I think Matt Doyle might actually leave his apartment and come to New York. Is that true?
We'll see.
We'll see. There's no answer. No more answer than I would expect from Mr. Matt Doyle. And, of course, you have Playoff Central this week on Wednesday night and Thursday night to both preview and post-view. Yeah, I made that one up, but I'm going to go with
post-view. I like that a lot.
Post-game shows for both legs of the conference championships. Let's go to the second segment. Let's talk new coaching hires, and let's talk player transfer as well in Major League Soccer.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. Sirius XM FC Channel 85. Of course, Major League Soccer never ends. So we've got two huge conference championships this week, but we've got coaching hires already made, coaching hires around the corner, and then a ton of transfer work going on with all these teams as they announce who is in contract and who is officially out of contract heading into the 2017-18 offseason. Let's start in San Jose as they made a coaching hire. Chris Leitch took over. It was not an interim term. He took over from technical director to coach after Dominic Kinnear. He led the team to the playoffs where they got knocked out by Vancouver in the first round, 5-0. And now San Jose has a full-time coach in Michael Stare, a 42-year-old out of Stockholm. He coached last year with BK Häcken. He led them to fourth in the Swedish division. Jesse Fiorinelli making his first coaching hire now after taking over last year as GM of this side. Doyle, let's look at what happened in the past first. Chris Leitch took over. They said it was an interim. It wasn't an interim. Now he's going back to being technical director for full time. So clearly it was. What do you make of the way they handled this?
It was weird. It was weird. I understand why they felt they needed to release, to part ways with Dom Kinnear when they did. And I understand, Jesse Fiorinelli and Chris Leitch probably felt like they see eye to eye on how the game should be played. They like the same type of player, so you want to give that guy a chance. I don't understand why the semantics with the interim thing. Jesse Fiorinelli during the year was like, oh, Chris Leitch is our coach. There's no interim tag for a reason. And now it seems kind of like he was the interim coach the whole time. And I don't want to say anybody was playing games here, but like it doesn't seem like they were on the up and up with the fans throughout all of this. The good news is that they in Michael Stare, they got a guy who is he's been around for a decade. He's coached teams before. He's not going to be learning that part of the job while he's on the job. But as always, there are unknown unknowns, and it's not easy to come in from, a mid-table team essentially in Scandinavia and just walk into the job in MLS and try to compete. There's a huge learning curve, and I hope for his sake and for San Jose's sake, he's already neck deep in it.
Yeah, Stare, a young coach, as I said, 42 years old. He's coached two of the biggest teams in Sweden, in AIK as well as IFK Gothenburg. He coached in China as well in the second division and in Greece for a short time. He's won two Swedish Cups, a Swedish Super Cup. He's got a few teams promoted, and he's won the first division with AIK in his first year. What's your expectation, Doyle, of what this coaching hire means for San Jose and what it brings to this club?
I have no idea. I don't watch the Swedish league, so I can't pretend to know the first thing about how his teams play, what he likes in players. I can extrapolate. It was Jesse Fiorinelli making this call, and we know that Jesse Fiorinelli did not like the sort of ultra defensive shape that the team took under Dom Kinnear. We know that he seems to like players first and foremost who can pass the ball. That is why he's the one who fell in love with Jackson Yuhl during the combine last year. And I guess maybe saw some of his tape at UCLA, and he was the one who was pushing Jackson Yuhl to get on the field. He's the one who made some moves for guys who could really pass the ball during their winter and then summer transfer windows. So I will extrapolate from that Michael Stare is going to talk a lot about wanting to keep the ball on the ground, wanting to use possession to break teams down and to go from there. But I cannot speak with any authority as to what exactly he wants to do.
It sounds like he and Jesse Fiorinelli crossed paths when Jesse Fiorinelli was with Lazio. They kept in touch as he was with Roma and took advantage when he realized that Michael Stare would be available coming into this winter transfer window, and went out and got the coach that he believes can lead this team into the future. And San Jose fans hope he's around for a little while, because this is the fourth coach now in 4 years for the San Jose Earthquakes. The entire assistant coaches will change over except Steve Ralston, who will remain with the team. And as I said, Chris Leitch will return to technical director. Staying in the Western Conference, Colorado Rapids still have a coaching vacancy. The Portland Timbers still have a coaching vacancy. It sounds like the Colorado Rapids will have that dealt with, though, in the next couple of days, maybe even the next couple of hours.
If you're listening to this on Tuesday, it might have already happened.
Doyle, if you know that it's done, why don't you make the announcement right now? You can say it in like language and stuff too.
The guy who was coaching New Zealand for the last couple of years and Bahrain before that, it's done. I heard last week that this was a done deal, and it's been trickling out in press, in the press all over on both sides of the Pacific. So I will bet all of Ben's salary that this young man is the new coach of the Colorado Rapids.
So another young coach, maybe he can live on the Upper East Side and hang out with Ben when he gets here.
I just bet about $45.
Yeah,
so
exactly. He can live with Ben in their 18-person apartment on the Upper East Side of Manhattan when Ben has no more money. Anthony Hudson, 36-year-old.
Wilmington Hammerheads, great, for the record.
Retired in 2008, was a player coach with the Wilmington Hammerheads, then went on to Real Maryland Monarchs, a team that's folded since then. Went back to England, worked part-time with Tottenham, then coached Newport County in some division that one of you can guess about, and then took over, as Doyle said, with the Bahrain U23s, promoted to the Bahrain head job, and has coached New Zealand for the last 3 years. At the Confederations Cup, he became the youngest head coach for a national team at a full FIFA tournament. What do you make of this move for them, Doyle? We know how we've read these letters, and the Colorado Rapids are going to find the Colorado Rapids way. Is Anthony Hudson going to lead them there?
I mean, I watched that New Zealand team play a few games, man. I probably saw them a half dozen times over the last 2 years, and they were not the most attractive team. They were super organized. They played mostly out of like a 5-3-2. They were very committed and played a lot of defense, but they didn't really beat anybody they weren't supposed to beat. I guess maybe if you go all the way back to the start of his tenure, I think they beat China. It was Oman. They beat Oman, and that was his only win against a non-Pacific Island nation. So this is, and that Bahrain team, I think when he was coaching it, they made the if I'm remembering correctly,
yeah, they made the playoff.
They made the playoff, but they made like the Arab Championship. They finished third in it, but they did it by not scoring without scoring a goal.
The question to all this is like, Does he play that way because it's clear that the players on his team weren't to the level of the other players that?
Yeah.
Well, did he play because that's his style? We don't know.
Well, I mean, I didn't see Garincha stepping on the field for New Zealand, so there is that. If you have your last two teams, kind of notable for not scoring goals, and then you sign on to be head coach of the Colorado Rapids. I mean, it seems like a pretty natural fit, doesn't it?
Okay, that's a lot to take in.
Doyle's making sure that Colorado Rapids fans don't get too excited or too happy right now, as it sounds like someone who's been compared heavily to Jose Mourinho, which means what? Absolutely nothing. But it's out there a lot. Harry Redknapp apparently said it, which means absolutely nothing as well. Anthony Hudson, he's been here in the U.S. at least a little bit. He was actually born here while his dad was playing for the Seattle Sounders. His dad was a legendary player in England, played for Chelsea, Arsenal, Stoke.
Just for the record, New Zealand put up 8 on the Solomon Islands to get to the playoff.
Well, Doyle was saying he has like 9 wins, and 8 of them are against the Pacific Island nations, which New Zealand normally is able to beat. One of the things New Zealand talked about when Anthony Hudson retired was it's the first time they've played a fully professional team. That was something he pushed a lot, was he pushed more friendlies, more games, pushed players to leave New Zealand and get professional minutes to try and get professional contracts.
Including many four or five current MLS. Mm-hmm. Well,
yep.
But current as of last week, yes.
Yes, but guys going to Europe, going to the Netherlands, going to England at a young age and trying to get contract as well. So you hope that he's able to help maybe Colorado develop some good young players and push things along. Let's talk about contract news as we're getting there. I want to start big picture, and then we'll start to get into a few of these teams. Doyle, last year, Chicago was last in the Eastern Conference, Houston last in the West. Chicago ended the year third in MLS. Houston's now in the Western Conference Finals. Do you see a team out there that you are excited about how their rebuild's going to go, or a team that you think has the structure to make one of those turnarounds?
I mean, RSL were, I think, one of the two or three best teams in the West by the end of the season, but they finished eighth because they just got off to such a horrible start. So I'm excited for that. I want to see what they are able to do with that number nine position, because I don't think Yurimov Sissing is coming back. That's one that I expect to see jump. Obviously, LA Galaxy, I mean, Ziggy's taking care of all the family business right now. I think they just cut the entire team just about. So, well, you know, if they get that right, they can climb. But at the same time, they don't have a free DP slot. They don't have the ability to go out and get it, you know, the difference-making number nine, which is what they really need. And, well, they need some other stuff, too. There's a reason they cut 25 people. And then Orlando City is super interesting to me, because I think they obviously they had to get younger. They're going to have multiple free DP slots. They're probably going to have some amount of windfall, because I assume they're going to sell Kyle Aaron. So those are the ones that I think really stand out.
Well, let's start with the LA Galaxy. As Ben mentioned, they basically got rid of their entire team. They have zero goalkeepers on their roster. Jermaine Jones
just
also,
like last year.
I knew Doyle was going to say that.
You're talking about Senegal international and possible World Cup goalkeeper Clement Diop.
Yeah, right? I think that's who Doyle's talking about, and I think he feels pretty comfortable doing it as well. Jermaine Jones turned down a contract offer, apparently, so he won't be coming back. It sounds like Ashley Cole's contract will terminate at the end of the year as well. So do you want to get into, like, where is Jermaine Jones going to end up right now? Ben, is that where you want to start with this?
No, I don't want to. No.
So the LA Galaxy, a ton of moves.
They have basically no players.
They have basically no players, which is probably a good
thing.
I mean,
that's they should be like an expansion draft for the LAFC.
They probably should be. A lot of the guys they cut, though, homegrown players. We've talked about it on this show a lot over the last year or two, but they've invested in that academy and they have not seen the production from it. Jose Villarreal, one of the big shining lights for a while as a homegrown player, is now available as well. Out of that team, the New York Red Bulls cut a couple homegrown players. The big names, though, Gonzalo Verón, Damien Perenel, and Mike Grella. Grella couldn't get healthy this year. Perenel, I think, not a huge surprise that he's gone. And Verón, it sounds like, Ben,
he's still in discussions, according to the team release. Keep in mind, so we're recording this right now at 5:15 on Monday. So there's going to be a lot more teams that announce over the next, you know, 12 to 24 hours. So we're not going to get to every team here. We've had a bunch that just came through while we were recording this. So we're still kind of evaluating what's going on. Yeah, Verón's still in discussions. You know, just because maybe these guys' options were declined or they're out of contract doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to be on the team next year. It means they didn't want them at the current contract they were slated to make. So we could see a couple of these guys back, but I would say for the most part, we say that a lot, but the players do not return.
And then they go into the reentry draft.
When we go into reentry draft, waiver draft, you know, and then just some of them just end up being on a free. Some of them go down to USL. You never know with a lot of these players.
Sporting KC making their announcements. Not a lot of big names, it sounds like, but when you look at their roster, Ben, one of the things you noticed was basically that core that we've talked about, whether they're dynasty or not, all the Open Cup championships, the MLS Cup as well, they're all out of contract next year.
So This is all teams. If you could do what Sporting Kansas City did in their release, I would really appreciate it personally. If you go to Sporting Kansas City, I mean, if you go to their website and you look at what their announcement, they listed, you know, all the players they declined the option, picked up the option, but they also listed the contract status of every single player. They listed when their contract ends and what option you left. If you look at that. And you look at the players that have their contract ending in 2018 and don't have any more options, you have players like Benny Fellhaber, Graham Zusi, Matt Beezer, Sesanovic, Roger Espinoza, Tim Melia, Ike Opara. Basically, their entire team is out of contract at the end of this coming season. So either, I mean, they're going to have a lot of decisions. I think we could see a couple of those players resigning, obviously, over the course of the next 12 months. But we could see an entirely different team a year from now.
Do you, Doyle, do you see a situation where any of those players maybe are players that other teams look at to try and come in and maybe say, hey, SKC, here's you can get a little something rather than lose them for nothing at the end of the year? Or do you see this as SKC doubles down, tries to win it one last year, and then they reassess maybe restarting it?
I mean, the obvious one is Saad Abdul-Salam, just because everybody in this league needs right backs, and we've all seen him play right back at a pretty high level before. And assuming that Graham Zusi holds on to the starting job, they have the young kid they just signed, Jalen Lindsay, USU-17 starting right back. I assume they're going to want to start getting him minutes in 2018 and getting Abdul-Salam out of the way makes it easier and more likely to get him minutes. So that's the obvious one. There's not a ton others out there. I don't think Christian Lobato has any trade value. Sunni Saad, Jimmy Miranda certainly doesn't. So that's the one that I think jumps out at me.
One more piece, NYCFC, they announced their out-of-contract players as well. A lot of defenders, a lot of right backs like RJ Allen and Ethan White and Frederick Brilliant on that list. But bigger news than that is that Yangel Herrera will be returning for his second season. It turns out that his loan was for 2 years. And so one of the most important players for this team, Doyle, now coming back in that central midfield. And that was the huge question mark for a lot of people coming into this offseason for NYCFC.
It was. And I mean, I am so high on Yangel Herrera. I feel like if they needed to use a DP slot to keep him, they should have done it. So the fact that it looks like he is coming back for year two as a non-DP, this is a guy who was it the silver ball or the bronze ball in the U-20 World Cup? Whatever. He was one of the top three players at the U-20 World Cup this year. I mean, he outplayed Tyler Adams head-to-head. He has a contract with Manchester City already, and it's not like a, hey, you know, maybe we'll take a flyer on you. It's actually a, hey, we think you're really good type of contract. So this is a huge win for NYCFC if he comes back, and it allows them to get a little creative with the open DP slot they have because they got from Pirlo's retirement.
Closing out FC Dallas, making some announcements. It looks like Chris Seitz, his contract will not be extended, so potentially a decent starting goalkeeper available in Major League Soccer. Of course, a lot of players for FC Dallas that you expect to be brought back. One of them, Walker Zimmerman. It seems like maybe his future won't lie with this team. We'll see if it's whether through a trade or through a transfer outside the league. But one of the bright talents in MLS a year ago who really struggled over the last year with that team. And I think for the most part, that's all we've got for now.
I mean, San Jose also made their announcements. Victor Bernardes, his option was not picked up after many years with the club. Danny Hosen, they brought him in last year as a TAM player.
And he was the starter as they closed out the year with those big decision day wins.
His option was also not picked up. Interesting piece, potentially.
And that is all we have. Of course, send all your questions or comments to the mailbag. We'll have another show coming up on Thursday after the Seattle Sounders versus Houston game, and we'll get into all of the other contract situations as well on that one. But for this one, now let's head to the mailbag here for the third segment.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Smile with the rising sun. Three little birds. It's by my doorstep.
Mailbag time on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com, of course. MLS Playoff Central is your home pre- and post-game for both of your conference championships on Wednesday night around the 7:30 p.m. game and Thursday night around the 10:30 game. And then December 9th, MLS Cup. It's going to be cold either way, Ben. Are you excited?
I mean, of course I'm excited. It's MLS Cup.
Did you feel that, Doyle? Did you feel that energy?
He came in hot, as he always does.
It pulsates through my body when Ben Barrett just starts going like that.
It's going to be a fun one. I'm pretty excited about it. Build up to this for quite a long time, and now we finally get there. We got a good programming email from someone, which I really appreciate, mainly because otherwise I got to do it all by myself. Someone asked if we're still pre-recording holiday break episodes. We're going to do a little MLS story time, and he gave a couple stories that he'd like to hear. One, the 2001 Miami Fusion, and he starts with, Matt Doyle has mentioned this team a few times on the podcast over the years. Would love a deep dive. Doyle, where does this rank in your favorite teams in MLS history?
Aesthetically, I mean, they're right near the top because they kept the ball and they switched the field. They had the three guys who I think were just real playmakers at heart in Preki and Pineda Chacon and even Diego Serna as well. They had Jim Rooney, who's one of my all-time favorite players, who had a pack-a-day Newport Lights habit, but he still ran central midfield. God, I loved that team. They played with real style and real flair. RIP, man, pour one out.
And we got also some requests for Clint Mathis story time to Marcus Beasley, called Old Man Beasley, which I don't think he'd appreciate that much. Is there anyone, Ben, that stands out for you that you'd love to just hear for an hour and a half talking?
I think it's tough to weigh all of these. I think, I mean, obviously Clint Mathis is, you know, you always want to hear
Clint Mathis Pogo Lounge, man.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but
yeah, because you're young.
you always go to that well, you know that.
Also, I don't know why Doyle likes to rep his aging. But
I mean, we're not going to mention how old you are.
My experience,
here.
Yeah,
no, experience, sure. Yeah, definitely, yeah. That's what it is.
Doyle likes to consider himself wine, so he believes that he gets better with age.
But we all know that's not true.
Yeah, Daryl's more like a grape juice. He's more like a well juice. Let's move on. We got a complaint in the hotline 4012060 MLS saying, "How did Toronto, the greatest team of all time, not win any awards?" That is no longer true. Greg Vanney was awarded Coach of the Year, so you got an award. Congratulations, Toronto.
Good job. I mean, you got what you deserved. I mean, I don't understand where the players are coming from in this vote. The players voted for Tata Martino over Vanney, which I don't understand at all. I mean, you give the award to the coach of the best team of all time. Is that not a – I don't care how much talent is on the roster and how much talent there isn't on the roster. He got the most out of the talent. I don't think you can argue that.
Doyle, you have any arguments on Greg Vanney for 2017 MLS Coach of the Year?
I mean, no. He got my vote. I think it's a rule. If you coach a team to the best regular season in league history, you probably should have earned Coach of the Year. So I got no problem with that one.
Hello, ETR crew. It's Connor Hakes from Wichita, Kansas. Do you think it's possible that Bobby Wood ends up in MLS in 2018, considering he isn't starting for his Bundesliga team? More specifically, could you see him in KC next year, considering Vermees is looking for a new striker?
No and no. He hasn't had a great year, Bobby Wood. Hasn't had a great year for Hamburg. But he's still in the rotation there, and he's still very much in the prime of his career. He did play 82 minutes from the start this past weekend, so it looks like he has maybe worked his way back into the rotation. And he's under contract till 2021. Bundesliga quality striker, under contract for 4 more years. Even a guy who's not out there setting goal-scoring records, that's out of the price range for Sporting KC. It's been out of their price range their entire existence. I know they've talked a lot about going out and getting a real goal-scoring number 9, and I'm sure they're going to try to do that, but it's not going to be some guy who they have to pay $6-8 million transfer fee for. It's just not their MO.
Another question from Connor is this. He works at Spirit Aerosystems, and Gary Wiebe helped fix his computer. Is he related to Andrew Wiebe? Andrew Wiebe clearly not here, still currently in baby duty, but I did reach out to Andrew. I reached out through the baby.
He's alive.
The baby cried and said
No, Andrew Wiebe is not related to this, but we would like to encourage that all people that you meet named Wiebe, you should contact us and see if they're related to Andrew. 401-206-0MLS or at FOLG on Twitter. That's how you can get directly to Andrew. This was a very depressing one from a Houston fan. Silver lining from last night's game is that we don't have to worry about Jahlil Anibaba losing us the game in the second leg. Shows you
it's fair.
Where some
it's fair.
Where some Houston fans are at, and then
I appreciate that just feeling that you have when you're a fan of a team that loses like that.
Yeah, and Dustin in Bainbridge, Washington says Jovan Jones is so good. It's too bad that we're not going to get any money for him when he leaves. MLS clubs need to start tamming worthy fullbacks/wingbacks options in the future. And that's about all we have, guys. That was ETR for this one. Enjoy your conference championships. Of course, watch Playoff Central on Wednesday and Thursday night. And we will be back after Thursday's game with all of your review and your preview because we are on our way to MLS Cup 2017. For Ben Bear, Matt Doyle, and myself, thanks so much for listening.